I just love what you do for me. You're so reliable, smart, and incredibly well-connected.
Excuse me, could I pay for my meal?
Oh, of course. Just having a moment with my CommBank smart terminal. Tap away.
Feel a stronger connection. With extra connectivity, you're always payment ready. There's more to love with the CommBank smart terminal.
It is a nice terminal.
Eligibility criteria, fees and T's and C's apply.
Hey, welcome to the MediCubes podcast, where we bring you all that's good, exciting and sometimes challenging in primary healthcare.
I'm Chris Spee, joined by my good friends Kim Poyner and Rivka Hagen. Together we bring a wealth of experience and passion, as well as being in the thick of what's going on in our industry.
We used to have a laugh, debrief and chat about all the big issues and what was happening in our own professional worlds, and invite you to join us in this conversation.
So join us and our invited guests every month to bring you a lighthearted take on the latest, greatest and controversial issues and a few pearls of wisdom along the way.
In the spirit of reconciliation, we acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which we meet and pay our respects to the elders past, present and emerging. A hearty welcome from Birrarri country.
And Rivka Hagen here. I'm meeting you from Jajawurrung country.
And a big hello from Turrbal and Jagera country.
Welcome back, everybody. We have another hot MediCubes episode coming right up for you. We are so excited. I'm here in the studio today with Kim Poyner. Unfortunately, Chris can't be with us today. He's not feeling too great, so we're hoping that you will have a really speedy recovery, Chris. But who we do have with us today is our very special guest, Denise Lyons, who's going to take us through all of the issues and benefits of having nurse practitioners within your health service. So we know that there's been a lot of call from our networks around scoping out what nurse practitioners might look like in our general practice settings. What are the benefits? How would we go about it? What can they do anyway? So there is a whole heap for us to talk about. Kim, welcome. What are your thoughts for today?
Yeah, I'm super excited. You know that I always love talking nursing, particularly hearing the breadth and depth of different nursing roles that we have here in Australia. So I'm delighted to finally meet you, Denise. You've been a name that I've heard and seen around on some papers and documents. And, you know, it's a great joy to have you here with us today. And of course, as Rivka highlighted, we're missing our third wheel, Chris, so we wish him all the best and look forward to him being back on deck with us. But welcome, Denise. It's a great delight
to have you.
Thank you.
I really appreciate the invitation. I'm a proud nurse practitioner and, yeah, just love to spread the word.
Fantastic. So for our listeners, let's give them a quick rundown on your qualifications and your background, Denise. So Denise has been a nurse for more than 40 years. That's quite an innings you've got there, Denise. And she began working in primary care 25 years ago. In 2012, she was endorsed as a nurse practitioner and currently works in general practice in Newcastle, as well as working at the Hunter New England Central Coast PHN as a clinical editor on the health pathways. And she's also working for the Hunter New England Local Health District, the LHD, in virtual kids service. She is extremely passionate about health equity and access. And gosh, doesn't that align so nicely with where our values lie too, Kim? Yeah. And furthermore to that, she is on the board of APNA. So what a wealth of experience. Welcome, welcome to the podcast, Denise. As we kick off, we always like to break the ice by asking you to tell us about your fun fact. And we are coming in absolutely cold. We do not know what Denise is going to come out with today.
So my fun fact, I help raise guide dog puppies. So Guide Dogs New South Wales have their own breeding program. And before their pups can go into training when they're about 12 to 14 months old, they need volunteers who will raise up those puppies and teach them some manners before they can go into an assessment program to determine whether they're going to be a guide dog or something else useful. So we get those puppies. Now, my friend likes to call them little terrorists, because if anybody's ever raised a puppy, you know that for those first 12 months, they can be quite a handful. But we really, really enjoy that as a hobby. It gets us out walking. It gets us puppy cuddles. And we do just temp care, which means if we're going to be away, we can say no. But when we do need our puppy cuddles, we can have a pup with us pretty much whenever we're available. So it's a great joy.
How noble is that? And I can just imagine how joyful that would be to have these little tykes running around with you. Gosh, hey, I'm just thinking we could pivot right away from nurse practitioners and just talk about puppies here. That would give me a whole lot of joy.
Let's do that. That'd be fun.
I'm just picturing mass destruction across your home.
That's all I'm picturing. Denise, what a woman. Oh, I would not be putting my hand up in my shoes to be getting wrecked every week.
Yep, you have to be not too attached to your shoes or put them up, nor your carpets, nor any furniture. But they're good. They're good fun. They're beautiful. They're all Labradors. They're just beautiful.
So, Denise, let's kick off the conversation. I would love for you to tell us a little bit more about the evolution of nurse practitioners in Australia.
Well, I'd love to. So thanks, Rivka. It's been 24 years. So nurse practitioners started providing healthcare in Australia back in 2000, and they practice across every state and territory. The initial focus of the nurse practitioner role, as in most countries where nurse practitioners work, was to increase access to care for marginalized or vulnerable populations. So you would initially mostly find nurse practitioners in rural and remote locations or working with people experiencing homelessness or in aged care in those sometimes underserved or harder to reach populations. Today, you'll find NPs still working in those spaces, but as well working in a really wide variety of clinical settings, inside hospitals, in the community, in primary care. One thing that really did improve, I guess, the ability for NPs to work in primary care was in 2010, nurse practitioners were provided with the ability to access for their patients care that is subsidized through the Medicare benefit schedule and the pharmaceutical benefit schedule. So up in for those first 10 years, mostly nurse practitioners didn't work in settings where that was necessary. But now that has enabled an expansion, really. So it's been a good evolution. There still are just right around 2,000. I think the last workforce data I saw, there was around just a little bit over 2,000 endorsed nurse practitioners in Australia. So there's not tons of workforce there, but certainly way more now than when we started 24 years ago.
So fantastic, Denise. It sounds like it's a growing field. I'd really love to hear, for particularly people that might not know the pathways and education pathways on what's available in Australia, could you please speak to what kind of qualifications and curriculum do people undertake?
Yeah, sure. So application to become endorsed as a nurse practitioner, you make application to the Nursing and Midwifery Board of Australia, also known as the NNMBA. And this is a path that's available to a registered nurse who is currently registered and doesn't have any kind of conditions or restrictions on their registration. So Division One or registered nurse, whatever your local language is. And they need to have equivalent full-time experience of at least 3 years or 5,000 hours at an advanced clinical nursing level of practice within the last 6 years. And then finally, need to have completed an approved master's course. And then basically, you can apply for endorsement and you need to provide a lot of documentation to substantiate all of the above. There is another pathway. So there's the master's approved pathway, but there is also some people who come from overseas where they can provide documentation that they have had higher education substantially equivalent to what the NMBA would recognize as an approved program of study overseas. So if you're coming from the States or New Zealand or the UK, somewhere that you have equivalent kind of training, then that's what they call pathway B to endorsement. So instead of doing a master's degree here in Australia, you've done some higher education, tertiary education at a master's level in another country. And then you basically go to the NMBA and provide documentation of equivalency of those subjects that you've done. And you have to map your units of study to the Australian units of study. So it's quite a lengthy process and quite rigorous.
Thanks for that, Denise. Can you also tell us a little bit more about nurse practitioner's scope of practice? What are some of the things that they can and maybe can't do within their roles as well?
Such an interesting question, Rivka. Scope of practice is quite a hot topic. And I know the government's undertaking a scope of practice review at the moment. Mark McCormack is leading that work. And so much discussion recently about scope of practice. So as you know, we all have a scope of practice, which really talks about kind of the skills and the knowledge and the context of practice that a clinician feels competent and confident to perform and to practice in. As I mentioned, Australian nurse practitioners have extensive postgraduate clinical experience and they have completed a master's degree. So they can undertake a complete episode of care using an advanced nursing model of care. So it is within the nurse practitioner's scope of practice to assess and diagnose health problems and to order and interpret diagnostic tests and to formulate and assess response to treatment plans and to prescribe medicines and refer to other health professionals, all within their specific area of competence. Nurse practitioners can also admit and discharge patients from health services, including hospitals. So really, it is an individual thing. There isn't sort of a list of things a nurse practitioner necessarily can and can't do. And just as any other clinicians, you'll find nurse practitioners that have certain experience and expertise with certain clinical conditions and less experience. So just as an example, there's lots of nurse practitioners who are working in the area of mental health, others who are working in the area of diabetes, others who are working in primary care in these kind of specialized areas, renal health, dialysis in primary care, just to go back to that, mental health, maternal child health, geriatrics. So general practice is a place where we all have to be kind of across everything. So myself in general practice, I am a bit of a generalist with a sort of a passion for maternal child health. So at the practice where I work, the team tends to funnel a lot of maternal child health towards me. And I think always we work in the context of a team. In my experience, every place I work in the context of a team. And really, it just depends. I think nurse practitioners are really good at finding the gaps. So, you know, if it's about diabetes, then you might find a nurse practitioner who goes off and really upskills in that area.
Yeah, I really appreciate what you're saying in terms of access to marginalized, underserved, harder to serve areas, you know, and the like. And from my experience, and this is quite a small perspective on your knowledge, Denise, there seems to be, as you say, they're good at finding the gaps, right? And I see a lot of nurse practitioners in after hours space, particularly in primary care. What's your experience with that? Are you seeing a lot more in that after hours versus the normal hours or usual primary care?
It's interesting that you ask that, Kim, because I do think there's a lot of nurse practitioners who are interested in providing after hours care. Unfortunately, the way the current Medicare benefit schedule is, there's no, like financially, there isn't a real incentive. So for example, the nurse practitioner consultation item numbers are the same if you're seeing the patient at 10 a.m. on a Wednesday as if you're seeing the patient at 8 p.m. on a Friday. You can compare that to GP, Medicare benefits consultation item numbers. You know, there's some loading. Nurse practitioners also currently aren't able to access, unfortunately, the bulk billing incentive. So there are some structural issues around nurse practitioners working with exactly the populations who we initially worked with when the nurse practitioner role first started to evolve here in Australia, the populations and time periods that you mentioned. But hopefully, you know, as we evolve as a profession and as the government and primary care evolves to embrace the role, hopefully some of that will change.
Denise, we're starting to touch on that pretty sore topic around Medicare rebates for nurse practitioners and the fact that really in and by itself does not make for a viable service. The dollar amount attached to the consultation items is really quite paltry. From your perspective, what are the ways in which health services are able to turn this into a financially sustainable and a reasonable kind of service? What have you seen working out there?
So patients, where I work in Newcastle, patients pay the same gap between the Medicare benefit schedule and it's a privately billing practice. So basically patients pay for the service. That's one model that works. Mm-hmm. It's a private service. But unfortunately, it doesn't address the issue of access. So other models of care that I have seen work, some nurse practitioners have successfully gained grant funding to implement clinics in primary care. Sometimes that's been through APNA, nurse-led clinics. I had some, you know, you have to be a bit looking around and seeing what the opportunities are for quality improvement, you know, if there's any funding for that, or sometimes research projects come up that provide an opportunity for funding, but it is a challenge. It's a real challenge. So I think there's been a lot of discussion around block funding coming to general practice. And I guess I'm going to say I wait with bated breath because I think that is the way forward for enabling team-based care.
I'm glad you brought it up. You know, we did do a beautiful piece on the budget. Like, we were the most excited people, I think, watching the budget, and we were sending each other ping, ping, ping messages. And then we collated all the information and we brought out a very timely podcast in response to it just to break it down. And there is certainly a piece in My Medicare about nurse practitioners. Could you speak to that, Denise, about what's forecasted without breaching, obviously, anything that you might be involved in terms of an advocacy role or et cetera. But, you know, maybe it needs to be kept at that higher level until the devil's in the detail comes out.
Yeah. I mean, I think that My Medicare has been, it's just the first step, right? That's what we all understand. It's the first step to kind of identifying which patients belong to what practice, so to speak, without removing their autonomy and ability to choose. But I was happy to see, now it's my understanding that patients are able to enroll under My Medicare with a nurse practitioner as their primary clinician, which is great. That's a big step ahead for us. And I guess all I can really say is nurse practitioners can definitely practice as part of a larger healthcare team, and that's where I work and I'm comfortable and happy. I work in a fantastic team. Other nurse practitioners have set up independent businesses and may form partnerships with patients and their families to act as their primary healthcare providers in other kind of primary care settings. So I think that's a space. It's not a publicly funded space, but I think there's a lot of reactions to concerns about access that are arising. It's an interesting time, isn't it, to be in primary care, to be in general practice, to try to embrace this idea of improving access and equity while at the same time recognizing the constraints around funding and how we actually do it.
Yeah, we had Karen Booth on as well, speaking about what potentially could happen with the nursing workforce. And we're celebrating the fact that there's going to be scholarships. So for anyone that's out there listening going, oh, I wouldn't mind, and what's my investment to myself and the rest of it, it may be a very timely, you know, space at the moment to be thinking about, is this somewhere that you maybe as a nurse want to go with your career? Denise, do you want to talk more about what's available in terms of scholarships?
Yeah, I don't think it's really been announced. You know, I don't think we have hard, but I do know it's coming, that there will be scholarships. I would say that it's, I guess I just wanted to say about the last thing we were talking about, financing in general practice, that people who have called up the practice manager where I work or the GP principal and said, how are you doing that? How are you employing a nurse practitioner? And they've spoken at APNA conferences too on this. They say, and I believe this to be true, nurse practitioners tend to be passionate, motivated, educated individuals who will embrace quality improvement and have an awareness of change management principles, and I think can bring much, much more to a practice than you could ever measure in dollars. If you want to put a GP in that room instead of a nurse practitioner, you probably will make more money. But you have to also consider in culture and values and what inspired, motivated nurse practitioner can bring. So I think you have to think about it also in terms of non-monetary rewards. That's from the practice side. Just from the nurse side, you know, when you know more, you can do more. And that's very rewarding as a nurse. There are so many nurses out there with so many years of experience. I mean, let's face it, the average primary care nurse is well into their late 40s, early 50s, and have been working as a nurse their entire professional lives and have so much knowledge and experience and could do so much to help patients. So if you're a registered nurse with, you know, especially if you have a special area of interest or a passion for it, you have some experience at an advanced nursing level of practice or support to work at that level in whatever environment you're working in. You know, enthusiasm to be a leader in nursing care and a commitment, I think, to improving the health of Australians. Do it. Do it.
I love what I'm hearing here and what I'm thinking of as you're talking through those opportunities, not just for nurse practitioners, but nurses more generally in that primary care space. For me, I kind of land on that notion of, yep, we would love for nurses to work a little bit more independently, but also the opportunity for nurses to bring their specialist skills even within a primary care environment can bring real richness both to the nurse's experience and, more importantly, to the patient's experience. I've witnessed this very directly, and I mean, this is a little while ago in terms of setting up cervical screening clinics, where instead of that sort of leaning on having to have a GP as that inherent support for that model, that we developed this as quite an independent model, including completely private billing for that model. So this was not a nurse practitioner environment, but it was a nursing environment. And we tested this out, right? Are patients going to be prepared to pay for a well women's clinic type of service with a nurse at hours where women are likely to be able to take advantage of that offering? And it was a roaring success. So these were evening clinics that were primarily aimed at working women. And the value that these women saw in attending to a nurse for these needs was very different to what we consider to be the sort of traditional GP patient type of service as well. And so I see that there is that sort of great overlap between how nurse practitioners can add real value to our clients' experiences. But it's not just nurse practitioners, it's your RNs and your ENs as well. And we just need to get innovative, right?
Yeah, and I think that goes back to, you know, how general practice is funded. And so I do hope that as we evolve, there is that payment structures that enable that team-based care that does allow people to work in that way, to do what they can for the patients at their appropriate scope of practice.
Yeah, fantastic. And Denise, we've just really loved hearing your passion, also hearing about what the big picture, why nurse practitioners were originally came about and what was the big picture here. And, you know, Rivka and I, big on having access for all Australians, right, to good, high quality care, to the right people in the right place, the right time, and the right person, right? And if it's team-based, fantastic. It takes the load and takes the congestion out of the system. It also allows for people to connect virtually also as well as face-to-face, which has been a great progress, I think, from COVID, that we've all really adapted from that telehealth kind of model. So applaud you all, the 2,000 of you, and all the ones in the future who are stepping up to this space in the coming years. All right. Well, thank you so much, Denise. It's been such a joy having you here with us. I'm just going to hear final thoughts from you, Rivka.
Yeah, look, I can just see so many services continue to develop and evolve with the better collaboration and integration of all of the various health professionals that have impact on patient health outcomes. And so I think the better we can enforce and enact that team care, the better outcomes we're going to get all around. So I'm just really looking forward to see what the next iterations of the 10-year plan is going to look like and to see further opportunities for nurse practitioners and for nurses within the healthcare sector in Australia.
Yeah, hear, hear. And Denise, a final word from you.
I think nurse practitioners are unique in their transformative approach to healthcare, and we can really help to shape and develop services according to the needs of patients from a really holistic perspective. So if you're thinking about using the whip to bring a nurse practitioner into your team, I would say do it. If you're a nurse wanting to expand your scope of practice, your autonomy, your ability to do more for patients, I say go for it. I think there's wins for the practice, wins for the nurse, and wins for the community.
Yeah, look, I have still one question that I would love to throw at Denise before we wrap up today's wonderful discussion. And that is around the collaborative requirements as they stand at the moment between GPs and nurse practitioners. Denise, can you outline just a little bit more about what that looks like and perhaps some changes?
Sure. So, Riv, as you would know, collaboration is embedded in all nursing roles. We collaborate. Most health professionals practice collaborative care and recognize it as essential in improving and maximizing patient outcomes. So collaboration in clinical practice should be used to support clinical outcomes. The mandated requirement for nurse practitioners to form collaborative arrangements in accordance with the National Health Collaborative Arrangements for NPs determination, so a legal instrument, it relates solely to patient access to the Medicare benefits schedule and the PBS for subsidized care for prescriptions provided by an NP. If collaborative arrangements are not in place in accordance with that legal determination, the patient can't access a rebate or a subsidy. So it is a legal requirement under the National Health Determination, but unfortunately, you know, the thing is, it hasn't been found to improve outcomes or improve safety or quality of care, and it has added barriers to patients accessing care. That has really restricted access of care to vulnerable Australians due to that interpretation of that legislation by different healthcare providers. So there was a bill introduced in Parliament last week to try to change this legislation, remove the requirement for collaborative arrangements. And really, the aim of that is to enable full scope of practice without barriers. The NP role does, as we've discussed, it does increase access to care. It is cost efficient and I think can influence social change in our delivery of healthcare in Australia.
What a fantastic leader, and we're so grateful that you came and joined us today. And we look forward to seeing all these nurse practitioners go and do their, complete their education and training, and for, you know, that team-based care to really shine throughout Australian landscape. So thank you, everyone. Don't forget to hit subscribe to our MediCubes podcast and, of course, share widely and freely. Thank you, everyone.
See you all next time.
Thanks for listening to the MediCubes podcast. Make sure you subscribe via your favourite podcast listening app so you don't miss an episode. MediCubes is brought to you by Cubico, MediCoach and Medical Business Services, with technical support from the awesome crew at Talking Health Tech. This podcast presents information of a general nature, and we recommend that you obtain professional advice for your individual circumstances always. We'd love to hear your feedback, questions and suggestions for future topics on the show. Make sure you visit us via the MediCubes website, which you can access via the show notes of this episode. Also, if you're enjoying the show, write us a nice review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and share it with someone who might get some value from it, so we can continue to share these important messages with more people. Speak to you next time.